Hey everyone, welcome back to Zen Mom and Everyday Gurus. This is Mary. This is me awakening to spring with probably some of you that have been living in cooler climates and have more of a transition into what spring feels like when we've been like through winter. And so I'm looking out and seeing my daffodils in bloom, and I'm excited about that. So I hope you have some awakenings happening around you today, and maybe the sun is shining. But if not, that's okay too. And we're going to have like a conversation that might light something up inside for you today. I'm excited to share a guest that has become a recent acquaintance of mine through some networking that we both do as entrepreneurs and business owners. I have Sarah McCready with me here today. Welcome, Sarah.
Good morning, Mary. Hello.
Thanks for being here. Just a quick introduction to give you an idea of who Sarah is. Her company is called Illuminate Joy, right?
Illuminated Joy, yeah.
Illuminated Joy, yeah. And she's an intuitive mentor, a Reiki master. So we share that energy healing. And just a healer in general. And she's a survivor that turned into a thriver. I love that little piece that you have on your website. And she helps guide people back to joy by teaching women to rise up, reclaim, and reconnect to the parts of themselves that they lost on the way to the top. And that's so many of us. Welcome, and thank you for the work you're doing in the world.
Oh, thank you, Mary, and thank you for the work that you're doing in the world. I truly believe that we are all connected, and that when we heal ourselves, we are contributing to the collective healing. So each of my clients that comes in, anyone that I meet who is doing this type of work in the world, I also thank them for their contribution to healing the collective and raising the vibration. When we are tuning in, turning on, tapping in, we begin to heal ourselves first, but as well as heal the planet, heal others, and heal generationally, which is something that I talk about a lot in my work with my clients.
Yeah. Well, you've touched upon several things that I think deserve a deeper dive for people listening, because I think for you and I, a lot of them make a lot of sense. First of all, the idea that when we care for ourselves, we're actually helping the collective. That idea of healing ourselves and healing generations before us and generations to come is amazing window to knowing and wisdom that I think not everyone has. And I hope, and I don't know how you feel about this, but sometimes as women in particular, we have a hard time giving ourselves permission to do the work to heal, because we think we should be just giving in another way that someone else has defined for us, right? That often is depleting if we're already empty. You know, when I recently made a transition in my life, I kept getting this image of an empty tube of toothpaste that I kept trying to squeeze something out of, right?
the last drop, yeah.
It's like, there's nothing left, but I kept squeezing, you know? Nope. And to me, that was just like, I was depleted, right? I had nothing left. And if you're out there and you're listening, I think it kind of weaves back into what you said, the parts of ourselves that we kind of lose on our way to moving to whatever our top is, right?
I use that on the way to the top because my clients primarily are high achieving and intuitive women. So they're mostly in corporate and some entrepreneurs, but yes, on the way to the top can mean anything. It's really where you've gone on your life journey and have abandoned yourself. And like you said, that empty tube of toothpaste, you've used the last drop. There is nothing left to squeeze out of it. And it's time to move inward and begin to start that healing journey, that introspection, that life review, and replenishing. So that reconnection part is about reconnecting to your energy and filling yourself back up. And then reclaiming is reclaiming that it's okay for you to be first. And in fact, it's mandatory that you are not able to serve others at the highest level And by serving others, I mean however you show up in the world, whether you're an entrepreneur or in the corporate space or working from home or however that looks for you. If you are not looking after yourself first, you're not able to serve anyone else at the highest level. Mm-hmm. And I love that that imagery had come through for you about the depleted tube of toothpaste. It's so really apropos of what it's like when you've drained yourself mentally, emotionally, physically, and sometimes financially.
Yeah. Well, which makes me think about our intuition, right? I mean, and how can we talk about that just for a minute, or maybe we should come back to it, but we're right here. So let's do it right now.
Yeah,
if that's okay. Cause that was my intuition talking to that I realized mine comes in imagery.
Yeah.
And I know you help women tap into their intuition or knowing and listening. Like,
yeah.
Can you talk about that journey a little
sure
bit?
Can. Yeah. It's my favorite part, my favorite subject to talk about. So just to give a little bit of background about how I came into this world, I had experienced into this world of energy healing and intuition. I had experienced 4 separate toxic relationships over a 25-year period of my life. And it was through the 4th and final toxic relationship during my emotional recovery journey from that particular relationship that I began to connect into my energy and my intuition. I had been receiving Reiki to help me heal. And it was through the Reiki work that, or the energy healing, that I was able to open up the psychic senses or centers in a way that I hadn't been able to access them before. The intuition had always been a part of my life. It guided some of the major life choices that I made, particularly in helping me move out of the 4 relationships, in getting to safety, in having, houses appear, and in always shapes and forms. That intuition has been there. But for me, I was always looking at it as, it just was like in an emergency case. It wasn't like something that I could use every day.
Right.
And so when I began to open up the psychic senses and, or, beyond our 5 senses, using our 6th sense, I started to understand how that was helping me process the emotions, like the big emotions, the grief and the trauma and the betrayal that you go through when you've exited a toxic relationship. And it was through that understanding and learning about my energy that propelled me onto this new path in life. And it really was intuitively guided that I ended up here today doing the work that I do in the world and mentoring women. And so a big part of the foundation of the work that we do in mentorship is learning about your intuition and learning how it comes through for you, but also believing it and trusting it. There's so many of us that we have these little glimpses of intuition all the time, every day, but we don't necessarily acknowledge it. Or I've had, people share where it frightens them. They're not sure what it means. So they become afraid of it and they find ways to not be connected to it.
To numb it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Distance
yeah.
themselves. How do we know the difference? I mean, I think I can relate in that sometimes, I have so many thoughts that go through my head. I have so many, like all my internal family system, of all those characters vowing or, fighting for stage time.
Right.
That sometimes I will feel it'll get mixed in with that, like, or that will overpower it. And it takes sometimes me walking or some taking a shower or something that's, I guess, eliciting my relaxation response or meditation for that
it's
to come in.
Clearing.
But
it's so, as you were saying, the walk or the shower, you're really just clearing that the lower vibe energy and making room, giving access to the higher vibe energy, which is our intuition. And so making a distinction between the two, it does require practice. So how do you know, is it just the voices in my head, or is it really my intuition coming through? And it is about practicing, learning to decipher what's what. But an easy way to begin to tell for certain if it's just the mean girl voices in your head or if it's actually your intuition coming in is spirit, source, God, creator, whatever higher power resonates for you. When I talk about my intuition, I talk about spirit. Spirit's messages and wisdom is always in love. Always, always, always in love. And it feels really good and it feels really juicy. And it might feel a little bit scary because you're being guided to do something you haven't done before. You're being guided to get out of that comfort zone. But it's always really juicy and loving. And well, that was one of the
That's a pretty important piece, I would think, because it's usually the critic or the alarmist or the not a good enoughist in there.
The saboteur.
I know they get so much more, they're so loud sometimes. And so therefore the practice for sure. But I love the lower vibration component to that. And I want you to continue your thought, but for people that aren't as familiar with energy work, I want to just take a moment to talk about we're energy beings. Like, we're all condensed. I always say, like, I worked in radiology for over 30 years, and all those images are made by energy, right?
Energy.
And we're mutable and we're changeable.
Energy.
And so, just to like, and I have some little tricks I do with people to remind them of that, you know, even rubbing your hands together and feeling that energy, right? And then just closing your eyes and feeling what that feels like as you bring your hands closer to each other. We just disconnect from it. But, and I want to see if this is relevant, as a practitioner, as a Reiki healing master. When we do that work, that like organized work around doing a healing session with people, we're clearing out those lower energy vibrations. So some of that clatter, some of that confusion can be settled or released, right? And isn't part of that work letting the intuition come more to the forefront?
100%.
By connecting to the divine?
It's a byproduct. It's a byproduct of the energy clearing and healing. Because you're opening up your energy centers, the main chakra points, you are releasing that lower, denser emotion. So remember, energy is emotions. So, you know, there it's emotions in motion. Energy in motion is emotions. And when we receive healing through Reiki or whatever modality, energy healing, you're clearing those heavier, denser emotions or vibrations from the main chakra centers. And that allows for the higher, lighter vibrations to be brought in, to be received. And it's opening up those chakra centers. And when we are having a balanced chakra system, we are able to have more intuitive information come in. It's also because we are regulating our nervous system. So through the energy healing that I was receiving during my emotional recovery, and this is a key component of the work that I do with my clients, we focus on nervous system regulation. Because in order to receive those messages, to intuit your messages that are coming in, you have to be grounded. And in order to be grounded, your nervous system must be regulated. So moving out of that fight, flight, or freeze, or fawn phase, and getting into that rest, relax, and repair mode. Yeah. So the energy healing clears, and that, and then a byproduct of clearing that denser energy, those old emotions, that grief and the hurt and the pain, the shame, whatever it might be, when it's been released, that automatically opens up your intuitiveness because you're getting calm, you're getting grounded. So the root chakra and the crown chakra are directly related. And the more grounded you are, the more intuitive or the more messages you'll be receiving.
Awesome. And there's other grounding practices we can do, just like laying on the earth or, you know, breath work.
My favorite thing to do, go outside and lay on the grass, palms down.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, that's wonderful. Thanks for taking some time to like explore that for people. I think it's a huge component of our healthcare that's missing, you know, that we think about the physical body, but we forget about healing the energy body. And it leaves us not, you know, in a state of illness.
It's a missing piece of the puzzle. And that's what was that was what was missing for me. So in the previous three toxic relationships, I had experienced, I had gone to therapy each time, like after each relationship. So on three separate occasions, I had gone to therapy. And although I felt a little better, I never really like fully moved away from that style of relationship.
Yeah.
I wasn't addressing the cycles and the patterns, the repeating patterns. It helped me a little bit emotionally, but it didn't really move the needle on my full recovery. And it wasn't until the fourth and final toxic relationship that I experienced energy healing and therapy at the same time. And it was 100% the energy healing that was creating the emotional healing that I needed to have. It was the thing. So you talk about the healthcare system and the missing piece of the puzzle. This is why we talk about holistic health. There's so much more to healing, no matter what you may be encountering, whether it's disease or broken bones or emotionally, however the healing shows up for you or is required for you. It's not just one facet. It's not just the therapy. It's not just the physical therapy. It's not just the medicine or medication. There's a whole other component that when applied, and that being the energy healing or other modalities, alternative modalities, that when they're applied, you actually expedite your healing tenfold. You move through whatever healing you are doing faster than you would just using one modality. And you are able to create lasting change. That was the biggest part for me, was I finally was able to recognize the patterns that I was repeating and resolve, dissolve, understand, and forgive them, as we say in Reiki, and break that pattern. And not just for myself, but for seven generations back and seven generations forward. This is legacy healing that you're doing. So tying back into we are all one and this is collective healing, that's what that means. You are, when you heal yourself, when you break those cycles of patterns of behavior, be it toxic relationship or addiction or whatever unhealthy pattern of behavior that you have, any form of numbing, any type of trauma, when you heal that fully and completely and break the cycle, you're breaking it for seven generations back and the seven generations forward. It is a massive ripple effect.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And if we can just pause a little bit and talk about this, that you had four relationships and gratefully launched yourself in a different path after that. But can we just, and I know you're not alone in people that continue to get into relationships that are toxic, as you say, even though like you began to be aware and got help, there's something that continues to repeat itself. And when you talk about toxic, maybe you can just speak a little more specifically. So maybe people listening can be like, you know, understand
what
and
does
have
that
some
mean?
Relatability to it.
So I experienced emotional and mental abuse. And sometimes that is, in today's vocabulary, identified as narcissistic abuse. I don't lean into the word narcissistic abuse because I'm not a doctor and I can't diagnose narcissism. However, I use the word toxic relationship to, it's like a catch-all term to describe the spectrum of behavior that you can experience in an unhealthy relationship. So I fully believe that those unhealthy patterns that you're experiencing in, and it cannot only be romantic and intimate, it can also be experienced with family. It can be experienced in the workplace or with friends. And quite often, if you're experiencing it in an intimate and romantic relationship, you're also experiencing it in other areas of your life. Because at the core of that behavior, it's really about you. It's about you continuing to allow that behavior to be a part of your life. And so my programming and conditioning was that overachiever, people pleaser, overgiver, went along to get along. And so there was very little of me in any of those relationships. And so when you are, I'm going to backtrack before I go down that path. One of the things I recognized was that in amongst all of those relationships, the common denominator was me. And the day that I realized that, you literally could have thrown blown me over with a feather because I was so shocked. There was always a reason to look at the relationship as being the reason why it didn't work out. So the first three, there was, you know, some form of addiction that was present in the relationship. And thinking that I was healing myself after each of those relationships by going to therapy and starting to feel better emotionally and recognizing the signs of addiction, that I was, you know, moving forward in my life. What the fourth and final toxic relationship highlighted for me was that, in fact, I was the common denominator in those relationships because I didn't value myself. I didn't value my worth. I was highly successful. I had been in corporate for 20 years and I had, you know, been promoted. The one organization I was with them for 13 years. So there was multiple promotions, raises, bonuses, all of these things. So I was super confident. But what I recognized during the depths of my emotional healing journey was that there was no self-worth or low self-worth. And that is really what is at the core of being engaged in these toxic or narcissistic abusive relationships. It is emotional and mental abuse that you're experiencing because there is a level of tolerance that you have, which is part of your programming and conditioning, which is a result of codependent behaviors.
Yeah. Well, don't you, so to put this like in actionable like terms, like part of it, if you were in relationship with people that struggled with any level of addiction, there's often a stage in which we think we can be the solution to their problem. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that also, when you're talking about how lack of self-worth, I mean, tell me, and this is what I'm perceiving, how lack of self-worth can be disguised is that I'm just caring for this person. Not successfully, clearly, because it's their work to do.
It's their
as I
work
have
to
learned
do.
as well. But you know, we bleed ourselves dry. We light ourselves on fire to keep them warm, right? And so it's that we think, and this is the conditioning, I think, of women and mothers. You know, I speak to women and mothers. I'm sure men have their stuff, but that's not my journey that I understand intimately, right? So it's that you are giving so much of yourself to try to help. And, being in relationship with someone that has a mental health or addiction issue is, you know, it's impossible. It's impossible because they're not coming, you know, they're not showing up. Like I always say, when it doesn't make sense for a reason. If you know, like these steps should lead to this result and it's continually not, in fact, it's flipping itself on head and then you're feeling all these weird emotions, which, you know, the people in my life that have struggled with drug addiction or substance use disorder are really good at getting the people around them to walk on eggshells, right? It's their, they have their, whether they are consciously doing it or not, they have their protection too. So we just try harder and harder and to love more and more and more, right?
That low self-worth or no self-worth is a result of feeling like you are the one that's going to be able to help somebody turn the corner. You're believing in their potential, not in the reality of what's being presented to you. So you're always living in this potential future rather than confronting what's actually happening. So as you were describing, you're like turning yourself into a human pretzel to try and help them. And even though it's not being successful, you end up doubling down on your efforts and trying even more harder.
Right. I should just be more patient. I should
just,
make for, all the things. I'm lightening their load and
Just this one more try and it'll work. We're going to turn a corner. We're going to turn a corner. And you know, hope is the last to go. And it's the thing that keeps us stuck in our patterns of misbeliefs. It's the thing that ends up being detrimental. So you were talking about abandoning ourselves. Essentially, when we're giving to others and never looking after ourselves first in any capacity, whether it's in a toxic, unhealthy relationship or dealing with addiction, or whether it's at work, you are abandoning your needs and your wants and your desires for the sake of another party or person. And that never ends well. You end up on the short end of the stick. And really, through the work that I do with my clients, it's learning to identify that it's not selfish to look after yourself first. A lot of the work that I do is around this aspect of soul care. It's not self-care, it's soul care.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I want to hear more about that. And I also want to hear how you got around this corner in that fourth relationship. Was there an event? You know, what? Was it a divine intervention or like what kind of woke you up, I guess, for lack of a better, because sometimes I know difficult moments come into our life as a karmic 2x4 to sort of say, sorry, this is no longer an option, right?
For me, getting out of the fourth and final toxic relationship was truly a long and windy road. I ended up, there was divine intervention that got me out of the marriage and out of the matrimonial home. I had become quite ill because there was a full breakdown mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I knew I needed to leave that place to be able to start recovering. I didn't know at the time that there had been mental and emotional abuse, but I knew that I was not well and I needed to find solace and find a place to recover. In my mind at that time, it was like, oh, I'll just step out of this house and then I'll work on myself and we'll be able to revisit the relationship. But it was 9 months after I left that I finally recognized And again, through divine guidance, there was information that came forward for me around narcissistic abuse. And it was through reading about narcissistic abuse that I recognized everything I had gone through. And then it was at that point I began unpacking all 25 years.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't just that relationship. It was through the breakdown, the mental and emotional breakdown that I was having, starting to piece everything together. And that's when I learned I'd been crying for 6 months. I couldn't understand why I wouldn't stop crying. No one around me could understand it. My family was just as confused as I was about what I was experiencing. And when I started to understand and learn about narcissistic abuse and what that actually does to you physiologically, mentally and emotionally, I was able to then take steps forward to begin to start to repair, heal, and truly break that cycle for good.
Yay. Sounds like a hard,
yay.
It sounds like a hard way to get there, but I don't know if there's ever an easy way to make these big healing moments in our life. And it's not, so at some point during, was it during the 9 months that you started to like look at some different mind body medicine, energy work, or did that come later?
No, I had already been receiving Reiki. I'd already started like diving into, I'd been a big fan of Dr. Wayne Dyer. So I was already like reading his stuff again, watching his videos, absorbing that. I had begun meditating. It was really the piece about learning that we're all connected and that it wasn't just my relationship that I was healing, that I was being a cycle breaker for my family. And that was, you know, sometime after the 9 month mark that I recognized that's why I wasn't able to stop crying, because I was breaking cycles. It was not just my relationship. It was my mother's, my sister's, my grandmother's, my great grandmother's, and so on for all.
And you were feeling like all those emotions.
That's what that 6 months of crying was. It was theirs as well as mine.
Yeah.
It was the previous three relationships as well as the current relationship. It was all the relationships I had experienced in the 25 years of my life at that point.
That's so interesting and relatable for me. I didn't totally recognize that. Like I would be like, sometimes, why do I feel so, like life in general looks and feels pretty good right now once we've been through a lot of our healing, but you know, at times I would have this sadness. And then if one of my two other older children moved away recently and exciting their lives, it was good. But I was like, and even when people come home to visit, anytime I say goodbye, I'm just a mess again.
Tears,
and it's like all the loss and grief and sadness, even though I think I'm releasing a bunch of it, it all wells into that moment.
Yeah.
So that's my journey, but around that emotion. But I also find that I have a lot of energy towards the mistreatment of women that I have not experienced, you know, any form of abuse that I'm aware of in my lifetime. But I get vehemently upset about certain issues. And I have come to learn that I am feeling that for generations before me. And that's my kind of intuition that, well, part of my service here in this life for me is to maybe be that voice, which is partly probably why I have the podcast. Funny how things work out. And I've said to, you know, my therapist, my friends, I'm like, sometimes I'm surprised by how much certain issues bother me when I don't feel like I have directly been affected by them until I had this realization that, oh, we are connected and I'm connected to everything before this moment. Yeah. So it gives us, it's empowering. It's empowering. Yes. Yeah.
And not just this lifetime, but past lives as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
That's, it's so heavy when you're breaking that cycle, whatever that cycle is for you, when you're doing that deep soul work, It is heavy. It is
absolutely
heavy, but that's because you're clearing, clearing, clearing for this lifetime, past lifetimes, this generation, seven generations back. It's the collective, as we call it.
Yeah, I love that. And so that's why you call that soul work, because it's including that. And also, like, let's talk about the importance and how to release it so you're not continuing to store it.
Yeah. So soul care versus self care. So the reason why I started, I thought I'd coin the phrase, quite honestly, but I've seen it written somewhere else many times over the last 4 years. So I don't think it was an original idea. And as they say, speaking of the collective, apparently there is no original ideas. It all comes from somewhere. But
right.
I began to understand, and I teach soul care versus self care when it comes to recovering from trauma and emotional and mental abuse, because this is a deep, dark night, the soul journey that you're going on. It is a transformative journey. And it is not just about having your hair and nails done and a massage. Self-care, when that phrase became popular, it was really about, again, corporate women taking time to look after themselves by having their hair and nails done and making sure they got regular massages. When you've experienced emotional and mental abuse, when your nervous system is beyond dysregulated, when you have been out of your body for so many years, you don't even know what it's like to be regulated and in your body. Going and getting your hair done and your nails done and having a massage is not going to contribute to your healing. This is a much deeper practice that needs to be adopted and become part of your life. And so soul care talks about nourishing the soul. So that can look like non-negotiables, meaning you begin to have walks in nature, you begin a meditation practice, you begin a yoga practice, you begin some sort of mindfulness practice. You are consciously and intentionally taking time to look after mind, body, and soul. And so that is soul care, not just self-care.
Yeah, I love that. More sustainable to,
yeah.
I mean, well, sustainable to change. I would also just throw in, like, I think a therapeutic massage.
Yes.
I mean, would you throw in there, like,
not
acupuncture?
Not dissing RMT or massage, because I'm a big fan of massage.
But you're, but I know, like, the spa massage.
In terms of perspective and making significant shifts and lasting change, it's about moving inward and beginning to, again, look after yourself first, putting your oxygen mask on first before anybody else. Because if you're not looking after your soul care, you are not going to be full enough on vitality, on energy, on well-being to be able to serve those that are in your world at your best. You know, you're not living your best life. And so when I mentioned those soul care practices, that's just like the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
Yes. Therapeutic massage, acupuncture. What are some of the other modalities that I like? There's so many of them.
Craniosacral has been really powerful.
That's a good one.
Yeah. There are so many healing modalities. And and part of it, Sarah, the sustainable component is sort of about repatterning, though, right? Isn't it about, like, we're releasing, we're sending different messages to our brain, we're repatterning and building new neural pathways, right? That's also a huge part of mindfulness, meditation, and nurturing the nervous system back into a healthy state.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a lot of science behind that, I guess, is what I'm saying as well.
Oh, there sure is now.
Yeah.
Thank goodness we've got the science to prove, you know, what we've known.
What we already knew,
millennia.
Right?
I know.
Yes. Well, it does meet every more, it makes it more accessible to people to sort of go that route.
So when you've experienced emotional and mental abuse, trauma, emotional trauma, you are going to be required to rewire and refire your brain in a different way, and you're going to be required to regulate your nervous system. And so these are the modalities or the pathways to begin to do that in a very gentle way, in a way that you can understand, especially if you have no context for chakra system or energy work or anything like that. They're tools that allow you to begin to start on that journey of mindfulness.
So beautiful. And I think more than anything, you begin to feel it, right? You're less reactive. Oh, yeah. You're suddenly like, I think for me, that when I first started practicing mindfulness many years ago, it's like I began, it's not like the crazy reactiveness to my kids at times didn't still exist, but I began to become a witness to it. Like there began to be a little space between it. And then over time it was like, oh, wait, stop, pause, you know, between the stimulus and the response. And then you just drop into the moments and all the little moments can become bigger ones. And it's like a practice that has become like highly popular, the idea of mindfulness.
It is now. And I don't object to the fact that it's on people's radar now. You know, it's something that it's a practice or a modality that is due for recognition because of the magnitude of benefits that you receive from that. And so regulating your nervous system is such a key component of recovering from trauma. Moving through CPTSD and PTSD, which you experience when you've had emotional and mental abuse, using these modalities or practices is one of the, I want to say quickest ways, one of the most successful ways to begin to get in touch with your body and to regulate your nervous system, as well as rewire and refire your brain. So building those new neural pathways so that you can change your patterns of behavior. So you're no longer, like you said, reacting. You're able to move into being able to respond, not react. And you're able to, I call it the observer. You're able to start observing your behavior and catching it before it's this reaction that you're having. Yeah. And that's when you start to make the shifts. But all of that begins with getting regulated, getting that nervous system regulated.
Yeah. And you help people do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You mentioned PTSD, which I'm familiar with, but you also mentioned CPTSD.
CPTSD. So it's complex post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
So it's just a C in front of the PTSD.
Okay. And so that just means you have several.
It's like big T trauma and little T trauma.
Okay.
Little T trauma are repeated events over an extended period of time, and that can be months or years. And so when you're inside of a narcissistic or emotionally abusive, mentally abusive relationship, psychologically abusive relationship, you have been impacted by CPTSD. You are experiencing trauma on repeat. And when you experience trauma on repeat, your brain is literally changing. You are changing at the cellular level, because when you're under inside of that style of dynamic or that dynamic of a relationship, and that again can be at work, it can be intimate and romantic, it can be with a family member.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in that dynamic of a relationship, highly toxic, unhealthy emotionally, and abusive mentally and emotionally, you are under massive stress. And with massive stress comes elevated levels of cortisol. They are always present. So we're living in the word that we use these days is hustle culture.
Mm-hmm.
It is like being turned on. Your foot is on the gas pedal 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
You are not sleeping properly. You have brain fog. You are irrational because you're living in your limbic brain, that cortisol haze that we have. Your appetite is either, you know, you're or either overeating or undereating. You're either overexercising or underexercising. There's so many things that happen when you live in that cortisol haze. And that is a result of the trauma. And so this is why the nervous system regulation is so absolutely critical to begin to adapt into your life, pulling yourself out of that cortisol-driven way of being, so that you can then begin to make the positive or healthier changes in your life. Yeah. And
I'm not familiar with that. Yeah.
Mm.
Cortisol haze. Like I can totally relate to like going from to extreme at different points when my tube of toothpaste was truly empty. I'll be like, okay, I'm set up for that triathlon. I'm going to like get on that like raw vegan diet. Like I'm going to do, like, I got to go from here
do
to
all
here.
The things.
Yeah. There's no middle of the road here. And
That's
of course
right.
That was never real. And then at that point, I was so depleted. I didn't have enough to sustain anything like that.
Not triathlon training for certain. But
or
again,
any of it. It was
cortisol,
also just hard on myself. There was nothing like loving or kind about that at all.
Absolutely not. It is more self-abandonment, and the cortisol will propel you. Like you can run a triathlon actually. on cortisol. because that stress hormone is elevated and it just drives you forward. But what's happening is that it's impacting your organs and your cognitive functioning, literally your executive functioning. Your brain is not working properly.
Yeah.
It is being drowned out by the cortisol. So as an example for me, and again, this was all, I pieced this together and learned about this long after I had left, but I had an office job when I left the fourth and final relationship before I started my business. And I am known for details, like remembering details and high level details and all the details actually. And being really good at recall. And my job, all the jobs I've ever had in corporate have been dependent on me having that memory. It's been a superpower of mine in the corporate space. There was a time before I had left the fourth and final toxic relationship, and I was at my desk, and it was just sometime after lunch, and I could not remember what I had done that morning. There was no memory. The thing that I needed to do, the work that I needed to do, was not being done accurately. I couldn't remember conversations. I remember driving to the office many times and getting to my desk and going, oh, did I brush my teeth and put on deodorant? And most often the answer was no. So I started leaving back to the toothpaste. I started leaving toothpaste and toothbrush and deodorant in my desk. So as a way to compensate, rather than recognizing that something was seriously wrong here, I was compensating by, you know, adding the toothpaste and the toothbrush and deodorant into the office desk.
There's probably some people listening that are like, oh yeah, I've done that. I have done that. I kept everything doubled at work because after a while I had the same thing happening. Not from a toxic relationship, just from a very stressful circumstance in my life.
Well, stress, right?
Very difficult relationships with people in struggle.
That's right. Elevated levels of cortisol, no matter how you encounter them, as a result of stress. And when you've sustained that for any duration, that level of stress, AKA elevated levels of cortisol, you are going to experience CPTSD.
Okay. So let's talk about how can we regain this? Like let's talk about your program, Illuminated Joy is the name of your company, but the program is Illuminated
Path.
Path. Yes,
illuminated
perfect.
Path. Yeah.
So, and have you seen, let's just start by saying, have you seen people regain, have you regained some of this cognitive
Yes.
loss and things? Yay, there's hope. I think
Yes,
I'm still on
there
my journey
is
back with
hope.
that. But
There
so let's.
is hope. So that began for me, as I've shared, through regulating my nervous system. And regulating my nervous system meant that I needed to look after myself in a way that I had never looked after myself before. And so it meant eating really well. And by well, I mean more cleanly than I had ever before. So lots of whole foods, nutritious foods. You're very, very tired when you've gotten out of a toxic relationship or a stressful relationship. And so giving myself rest, I would have naps. I was so beyond tired, I had no choice. So I was sleeping a lot, going to bed way earlier than I had in the past. And then incorporating these practices that we've talked about today, learning to meditate, receiving Reiki, having massages, doing the things that were going to help support my nervous system. Because once I began to calm my nervous system, then I was able to start processing the emotions from that experience. And everything came back online. My memory came back. My appetite had come back because I was in the direction of not eating. Stress used to make me not eat. So my appetite came back. I remember thinking in the middle of it, I was never going to smile again. And not only am I smiling, but I'm laughing and I am joyful and experiencing joy in my life again. And yeah, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. There is a rainbow out there for you. It is a conscious choice, though. I mm-hmm. had to choose me every day and I had to choose peace. That became a mantra that I would repeat to myself multiple times a day, every day for probably about a year. I choose peace. I choose peace. I choose peace, because anything that didn't align or match with peace was removed from my life.
I love that. It does have to become a conscious practice. And I'm thinking boundaries came up also for you.
Yes,
yeah.
I learned about boundaries. I learned how to execute them, hold them, maintain them, and be comfortable and confident with them, and built up my self-worth. At the core, like I've said earlier, at the core of all of that was low or no self-worth. And really a lot of this work that I do inside of Illuminated Path is recovering and building up my client's self-worth.
Yeah.
So they are actively participating. The program is 6 months. And so we go through this journey together to heal the CPTSD, to regulate the nervous system, to understand what a toxic relationship dynamic really is, to learn about those patterns of behavior, to break the cycle. So you're stepping out of that codependent programming and conditioning and moving into what's known as independent and interdependent style of relationships.
Mm-hmm,
And with that comes learning how to have a boundary, learning to say, no, thank you, not today, and not feeling guilt about saying it. And then finally moving into living life in joy, which is really about that soul care work.
Yeah.
Learn what soul care practices work for you, and then applying them in your everyday life and making yourself a priority from now until eternity.
I love that. So beautiful. And I have to imagine around boundaries, because when we've been on that kind of journey, we begin to, it's blurred. Like what, so a boundary, as Brené Brown defines it, what's okay, what's not okay. And then it's been a little blurred though, right? So does the intuition come into this work of knowing like what aligns with me and what doesn't align with me when people are learning boundaries?
Yes and no. The intuition aspect is learning to trust the information your body is giving you.
Okay.
So quite often when we're with emotionally unhealthy people, we are being given signals through our body. We might feel super fatigued. We might feel grumpy. We might feel agitated. Sometimes it's super subtle, but we learn to acknowledge it. We learn to become aware of it and acknowledge it, and then use that information that our intuition, our gut, or our heart, or our mind is giving us. And then use, like, actually applying it or using it, not ignoring it, not saying, oh, it's just me being, I'm overreacting. You're taking it and you're applying it to your everyday life. You're saying, okay, this person doesn't feel good to me, and I don't need to make excuses about why that is. And I need to remove myself from the situation. And
yeah.
So just being really clear about that with yourself and honoring it. So using your intuition to make informed decisions.
I love that. It's also just reminding me, like, how we often get very disconnected from our bodies.
Yeah.
And our bodies, like, there's that book, The Body Keeps the Score, which I feel like is just always the phrase in itself. It's like our bodies are like such vessels of our knowing, and everything you teach is beautiful and tools people need to load up their toolkit with. And just to remind everyone, you have everything you need already, right? It's just the journey home to yourself that you're taking people on to access that deep knowing. And that's just
100%.
so beautiful. Yeah.
Yes. I am a guide. Like, that's what I say. I'm a guide.
Yeah.
I'm
With
a
a lot of wisdom,
teacher.
I would say, and tried and true.
Yes.
And I mean, I think, and it's beautiful that you've now taken this darkness in your life, found the light, moved and illuminated that light to shine on the path for others, which is what Everyday Gurus is all about. It's people finding that. And you're such a beautiful example of that. And so thank you for taking us on the journey that I think, you know, a lot of us can relate to, because I think it's important we hear other stories to understand where we can step in. And you have demonstrated that well. And now you help other women find their way through. So thank you for the work you're doing in the world. And I also just want to see if now that you're sort of in your maintenance or sustainable part of it,
yes.
how do you, I mean, you shared like the really deep work, but then there's sort of like on a day to day, what does it look like for you to maintain your health and well-being?
Yeah, I can still get dysregulated.
We all
And
can,
so
yeah.
There is always, the difference is now I understand what's happening and I get to use the tools. So I practice what I preach. I have a meditation practice. I'm in a four season climate. So I try to get out regularly, but there's, you know, some days and weeks where it's not so great. So weather wise, but
yeah, Sarah's in
yeah.
Canada. You're in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in Canada. Yeah. In Ontario.
Ontario.
And so yeah, we have all four seasons here.
Yeah.
And so getting outside was a big one for my recovery. It's still where I connect, getting onto the trails or the wooded areas that are near me. Like I said, the meditation, even just breathing, just starting to take some deep breaths. I don't practice breath work per se, but I've got my own like little type of breath work that I do, like a box breathing or a yoga breathing.
Yes. Yeah.
That 4-4-5. There's some quick little tools that I've developed over the years that I teach to my clients and that I use in a pinch. So like tapping related type of exercises that will just, when I'm, you know, when it's really somewhere that I can't like lay down on the grass and start breathing
right.
in. I'll use some tapping techniques. Pretty much everything that I teach, I use to this day.
Some as like a daily maintenance and some as like strategies, it sounds like to me.
That's a good way to put it. So for me, the daily maintenance is always that connecting in, typically in the morning. Sometimes it's morning and afternoon. It just depends on the day. And I am still facilitating meditations and Reiki as well. So I'm receiving as I'm giving Reiki as well, so that I get it that way too.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
If someone wants to work, so you see people individually, it's a 6-month program. Are there other, and they can find you on your website, which we'll have a link in the show notes. Anything else that's going on with you that you want to share?
Yeah, I have just created an introductory program. It's 30 days and it's called Breakthrough. And it's a really great way to actually begin to learn about regulating your nervous system, particularly because that is the starting point, as I've shared through this conversation today, that really is the starting point for that deeper inner work. So,
is that online?
So all my programs are online, one to one. It is coaching with me one to one, and and having a breakthrough, typically a single breakthrough, but depending on where you're at in your journey, you could have more than one. So that's my 30-day program called Breakthrough. And then the signature program is Illuminated Path, and that's a 6-month program.
Right.
And as a thank you for your guests for joining into this conversation today or listening in, I've included a guided meditation. So I'm also a meditation facilitator. That's one of the things that came out of this journey that I've been on, is creating, prior to last year, it was, or actually, I guess prior to 3 years ago, it was in-person meditation, but I do Zoom meditations as well, but I've created a little audio file, a guided meditation for your audience and your listeners.
Oh, nice. And we'll have the link in the show notes for that as well. Yeah, along with your website. I encourage people to go and check it out and all the beautiful work that you're doing.
And I would love to have a conversation. If there's anything I've shared today that you want to know more about, I love to connect and talk and learn about your story as well.
Yeah, thanks. I know this has been an area that I have heard come up a lot in a lot of women's lives that I know of. So I figure if it's happening in my circle, it's happening in a lot of people's circles. Yeah. And I think we as women are just wanting to do things differently. So this is a great service that you're providing. And from everything I know, these are all the tools that we all need today. It's kind of, you're marrying ancient wisdom with modern science. And
yes,
that's really
exactly
beautiful.
It.
Yeah, with your lived experience, that is really powerful.
For all us type A women out there, which I still am, despite, you know, all the significant shifts, I will probably always be a type A. And living in the corporate world for 20 plus years, that really contributes to wanting to know the science behind this ancient wisdom. And so, yes, it definitely is marrying both of those worlds together. Yeah.
Thank you. It is fascinating. I too continue to dive in to it all. Well, Sarah, I can't
learn
so much. Yeah, I can't thank you enough. Is there any little nugget of wisdom or something you'd like to drop before we close out? You've shared so much today that's enough. But if there's one thing that comes to your mind that you've
You just touched on it a minute ago. One of the key messages that I like to share on all of my social platforms, and the key messaging that I share in conversation, is that you are not alone. This journey feels so lonely and so bereft that it's really important. One of my mandates, personal mandates, personal missions, is that no woman ever feel alone on her emotional recovery journey. And so I have always made myself accessible on any platform so that we can connect, because you absolutely are not alone.
Felt that right in my heart. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Mary. This has been a really beautiful conversation, and I appreciate you.
I appreciate you too. Take care. Well, you guys, thanks once again for being here. It really means a lot. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. I think that Sarah has a lot of really powerful stories and nuggets of wisdom that she shared, and a great recipe for illuminating your path and finding joy and rising up and also not feeling alone in it. She's really a kind soul who I really think has put together something of very high quality. So, I mean, come on, who doesn't want a little more joy in their life, right? And healing. And sometimes we need her handheld, and I would want her to be part of my healing journey. So reach out to her if that feels aligned for you. If not, I hope that at least it got you some tools or helped you remember the tools that you have to heal, be whole, to enjoy your life. Come home to yourself over and over again, because that's it. It's not a one and done. So many more podcasts coming up. I got a lot of people coming into my lens. Really excited to start and explore further the journey with Srinivas, aka Frank, who you heard from last week. And who knows where we'll go? Lots of interesting avenues to explore. But I'm excited about that. I love to learn about different cultures, their food, how people, you know, celebrate, how they hold tradition and ceremony. And I always like to know how people prepare food and what they eat too. That's like really, I love that. So thanks for being here. Find something to celebrate. We'll see you next time.